facts, candid conversations, and some levity to lighten your day. This is the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio.
Marvelous Monday to you. Welcome to the Cale Clark Show. So glad to have you on board on this hashtag Maverick Monday. 1-888-914-9149 is the number to call. Once again, 1-888-914-9149. It's toll free. The call's on me. You can also email the show, cale@relevantradio.com, cale@relevantradio.com. And as always, you can follow me on Twitter. Hit me up there, at Cale Clark, C-A-L-E, Clark with an E. And we also have a show account as well, which is run by producer Lucas Holt and also Karen Moran, who's working social media and communications for us tonight. At Cale Clark Show is the handle for that account. And if you call that number now, Patrick Alog will be waiting for you, and there's a good chance you can get in because there's a couple phone lines open. So once again, that number, 1-888-914-9149. Over the weekend, the New York Times broke a story about the rise and fall of celebrity Protestant megachurch pastor Carl Lentz. Now, this is a story that I had heard about last month, but I kind of stayed away from it just because it seemed too vanilla, really. Like, basically what happened was that Carl Lentz, who was the pastor of the New York branch of quote-unquote Hillsong Church, which was a megachurch in Australia, and it spread all over the world. They have campuses all over the world. And Carl Lentz was in charge of not only the New York branch, but also pretty much all the ones in the Northeast. There was one in Boston. There's a campus, I think, in Connecticut somewhere. And he had been caught in an adulterous affair. And I just didn't think there was much newsworthy there. It's very tragic, of course, but somewhat uninspiring. You know, these types of things happen, unfortunately, a lot. Moral failures of pastors and church leaders. And, of course, this leads to a lot of crackback against Christianity in general. If you look at Twitter response to the story, you know, you'd hear tweets like, or see tweets like, you know, there we go, another church leader can't even get through the list of the Ten Commandments. You know, the usual sort of fare. So I didn't really talk about this, although other people on the radio, of course, talked about it, but I decided there wasn't really much there. However, this past weekend, the New York Times published kind of a longer form expose about some of the things that were going on underneath the surface. Ruth Graham, writing in the New York Times, talked about Lentz and how he came to power, if you will, and how he also fell. Now, in 2017, he really came to people's attention back, you know, obviously in the Christian community, the Protestant Christian community, people would have known about Carl Lentz. And by the way, Hillsong is mostly noted for their music. Hillsong Music, and, you know, Lucas, maybe you can pull up a clip at some point, but they have this song called Oceans, which was a mega, mega, mega popular Christian music hit, contemporary Christian music hit. And they're really known for their music program. They're really known for inspiring preaching, quote unquote. It looks a lot like motivational speaking, like going to a TED Talk with great music or something. But a lot of people are really into this, obviously. It's not exactly traditional church, as it were. But Justin Bieber, really, this, like, Carl Lentz got into the popular imagination a little bit back in 2017 because Justin Bieber, at that point, who had been going through some issues, abruptly canceled his international concert tour that at that point had taken him across 6 continents in only 16 months. And he had cited fatigue. His fans were very, very worried about him. But on TMZ, of course, that celebrity gossip website, TMZ narrated a more hopeful point of view on this. He had said, and at this time he was about 23 years old, Justin Bieber, he said he'd left the tour because he had quote-unquote rededicated his life to Christ, end of quote, thanks to the help of Carl Lentz, who he had gotten to know as the leader of the New York City branch of Hillsong. And they used to hang out all the time. Lentz and Bieber were spotted all over the place, literally all over the world. Bieber even moved in with the Lentz family for a little while. And Lentz had gotten in a little bit of trouble in the Christian world because he had been posting pictures of himself doing shots in a bar in New Zealand with Justin Bieber. Anyways, TMZ would publish a lot of material on Lentz and always, always in a very flattering way. And Lance had he had been a college basketball player at North Carolina State before dropping out. They had posted a video on TMZ that's quite popular of him dunking a basketball in an empty gym, Lance. And they thought he was really cool. He hung out with a lot of celebrities. A lot of celebrities went to the New York campus of the Hillsong Church, such as Kevin Durant, NBA star, Selena Gomez, singer, who coincidentally is Justin Bieber's ex. So that might have been a little bit awkward there. Hello, good morning. Good morning, Selena. Good morning, Justin. Anyways, also, he was interviewed by Oprah Winfrey, Carl Lentz, showed up on Kourtney Kardashian's Instagram account. He would he actually was kind of hanging out with the pastor, the Miami pastor, who performed the wedding ceremony for Kim Kardashian and Kanye West. But as he became more and more popular, and the New York Times article outlines this in quite a bit of detail, a lot of people that were attending the church thought that his focus on fame, cultural relevance, whatever that is, power and, you know, influence, those things had helped the congregation grow. But a lot of people thought that their spiritual mission was being lost. And it all came crashing down last month in November when it was revealed that Lentz had been caught up in a scandal. He had been cheating on his wife. And here's what ABC News had to say about that.
Lentz, known as a rock star priest at megachurch Hillsong.
The old is gone, the new is here. Can I get an amen?
Gaining a massive following since launching the New York City branch in 2010, often boasting of his celebrity connections.
That's why we all love people more. I just want to love Carl more.
But in a swift fall from grace, Lentz fired earlier this month, the church citing several reasons, including, quote, moral failures, launching a, quote, independent investigation into the culture of the church. Lentz admitting he was unfaithful to his wife of 17 years, writing on Instagram, I take full responsibility for my actions. I now begin a journey of rebuilding trust with my wife, Laura, and my children, and taking real time to work on and heal my own life and seek out the help that I need.
Okay. Now, Brian Houston, by the way, that voice you heard saying, Carl's my best buddy, that was Justin Bieber. Brian Houston, who founded the Hillsong Church, and I use the word church loosely, of course, this is a Protestant congregation, but he founded this megachurch in Australia years and years ago before it started spreading all around the world. He's still sort of the president of the organization. And there was a video conference that he had with Hillsong leaders on the East Coast back on November the 19th. A recording of that meeting was obtained by the New York Times. And in that meeting, Mr. Houston described that the church had discovered more than one affair that Lentz had been involved with, and also connected his dismissal to a lot of other things too, such as, quote, general narcissistic behavior, manipulating people, mistreating people, breaches of trust connected to constantly lying. So there's a lot more going on here, and as is the case with a lot of guys who do stuff like this, this wasn't the first time they had been unfaithful to his wife, it seems. So, a pastor swept up in ministering to the famous, ordinary congregants felt neglected, a culture that worshipped wealth and status, while at the same time making volunteers cater to the leaders of this congregation as if they were royalty. The soul was a little bit harder to find. Very interestingly, Brian Houston, who again is the head of this entire global organization, he said this, I want to make this very clear. Celebrity culture is not a core value of Hillsong Church. People are a core value. Jesus is a core value. End of quote. Now, I have a real issue with that last statement in particular. Jesus is a core value. I'm going to talk about that in just a minute. But lots of people who volunteered at the church, and some of these people were working 10 to 12 hour days volunteering at the church, which with almost no recognition, they began to be quite concerned about Lentz. He would disappear for months at a time, wouldn't be at the congregation. I don't know how they'd sort of fill in for him while he was gone, or whether he announced to people that he was leaving, they got substitute preachers, whatever. But then he'd show up at the Super Bowl in Miami that happened, of course, earlier this year. They would see him, you know, jet setting all around the world. He would have these elaborate, you know, fashion costume changes backstage, you know, very expensive designer clothing. Looking good, living well. To them, that was evangelism. That was evangelism. Janice Legata, who's quoted in the New York Times piece, was an early attendee at the New York branch. And she recalled church leaders referring to a very well-known biblical verse from the first book of Samuel that has to do with King David and how he was, you know, sort of picked as Israel's future king. Man looks at the outward appearance, but the Lord looks at the heart. Now, that verse is traditionally interpreted as an exhortation to look past appearances to what is more substantial, a person's character. However, at Hillsong, that was twisted around. That was flipped on its head. They wanted to attract, quote-unquote, spiritual seekers, superficial man, superficial woman living in the culture, and they felt that they had to present the best, quote-unquote, outward appearance possible. So people started coming to this place, not necessarily because they were interested in Christ, maybe it was a little bit of that, but because they thought Carl was a celebrity. They thought he was a good-looking guy, a fashionable guy. Lots of connections there, lots of celebrities there, and they pushed this. In fact, even when somebody more famous would go there, like an NBA star, an athlete, a recording artist, and they'd try to like sort of mingle in with the congregation, they would be very much pushed to go to these VIP seats that were up near the front. And they really wanted to make it known that this was the place where hip and happening people came to be to worship in New York. So anyways, some church volunteers began to be very suspicious of Lance and some of his relationships with women, and they tried to kind of blow the whistle on him and tried to report him to church leaders. But every time they tried, they were rebuffed. They were, you know, the doors were slammed in their face. Nobody believed them. Where have we heard this before? And eventually, though, it all came down because somebody on the church staff had discovered intimate text messages that were sent from Lentz's work computer to a jewelry designer that he was having an affair with. And after that was discovered, he was very, very quickly fired. So very interesting stuff. Very interesting stuff indeed. And a lot of the comments on the New York Times article are quite interesting. This idea of a caste system in the church, people jockeying for position, so far removed from the servant leadership that really is required of church leaders. You know, one of the things that is a title of the Pope in the Catholic Church is Servus Servorum Dei, the servant of the servants of God. In other words, church leadership should be about service. Jesus obviously exemplified this himself and constantly preached the apostles that they were not to be like people among the Gentiles, lording it over people, lording their authority over people, rather were to serve and take the most menial place. Jesus, of course, you know, washing the feet of his disciples, something that only a lowly servant would do at the Last Supper. So really, you should be looking to, you know, if you have a leadership position in the church, that means that you just have more people to serve. It's like an inverted triangle. You're at the bottom of that inverted triangle, not at the top. And so this whole idea of Jesus is a core value, that's something that you hear, that's corporate speak. That is corporate speak. That is not something that's theologically well thought out at all. That implies that Jesus is someone that we can control or manipulate to suit our ideas or our agenda. He's a category. You know, he's a core value, quote unquote. No. He is far beyond all of creation, and we should be taking our cues from him, not seeking to manipulate him for our purposes. So anyways, it's just an interesting study. And obviously, I pray for Carl Lentz and for his family, especially for his marriage. I hope that he's able to get the healing that he needs, and I hope for healing for him and his family. In fact, he's taken a leave now. He sold his house near the New York City area. He's gone back to California and is apparently trying to patch things up with his wife. And I hope that he's able to make those changes that he needs to. But if you think that that sort of thing doesn't go on in the Catholic Church, you're sadly mistaken. We have a celebrity pastor culture as well. You know, there are celebrity priests in the church. And I think one of the reasons why the horrific scandals that have taken place in the church over recent years, and there have always been scandals in the church, they've been to a large extent because of this, that this idea that there are untouchable priests, untouchable leaders that are unaccountable to anybody. And there is sometimes that sort of caste system that can take place in the church as well, in which certain people are protected, and as I said, they're just not accountable. So that's true, by the way, on the lay side as well. There are celebrity lay Catholics as well, and we have to be very, very careful about all of that, obviously. Jesus should be the only person that we're trying to get attention to, not ourselves. As St. Paul talked about in one of his letters, we preach ourselves. We do not preach ourselves. Yeah, better get that right, Clark. We do not preach ourselves, but we preach Jesus Christ as Lord and ourselves as your servants for Jesus' sake. And if people, everybody in the church needs to be accountable to somebody, especially leaders. And I've seen this happen. It is far too easy sometimes, even for parish priests, to be completely unaccountable to anybody. And sometimes bishops don't check up on their priests, and they should. And a lot of times these guys can do whatever they want. And so we've got to be really, really careful about the culture of celebrity in the church. This is obviously something that our culture is fascinated with, and sometimes we want to appropriate those ideas into the church. We don't need to be keeping up with the Kardashians, so to speak, in the church. And so, anyways, I just thought it was an interesting piece and a tragedy, really, as well. And, hey, I think Justin Bieber needs a better mentor. And so, for that matter, does Carl Lentz. He needs somebody to help him. He needs a good friend. And you know who really was a good pastor, a good friend to a former sinner, just like Lentz was trying to be for Bieber? Do you know who was a good friend to a former sinner and helped that person become a saint? That was St. Ambrose. St. Ambrose, and it's his feast day today, December the 7th, the great bishop of Milan. And not too long ago, actually probably was a little bit long ago now, time flies, this is back in 2007, Pope Benedict talked about St. Ambrose at his general audience. And it was fascinating. Benedict is such a great teacher. And he did this series on the fathers of the church for his general audiences. And one of the fathers that he talked about was Ambrose. And Ambrose died in the year 397 AD. And it was actually during the Easter Triduum. On Good Friday, he went up to his room to pray. And he kind of laid on his bed and he stretched out his arms in the form of a cross. And he was just praying. And unfortunately, when they found him the next morning, the deacons and some people that were with him, he was not in good shape. They could see his lips moving, said Paulinius, who was the faithful deacon, who wrote actually the life of St. Ambrose. We could see his lips moving, but we could not hear his voice. They knew that he was in big, big trouble. And there was another bishop that was there who was living in the house, sleeping on the upper floor from where Ambrose was. They woke him up and said, "Get up quickly, Ambrose is dying." And this bishop, his name was Honoratus, hurried downstairs and gave viaticum, the body and blood of the Lord, to St. Ambrose. And as soon as he had received and swallowed the host, he died. So there you have it. He died on Holy Friday, Good Friday, in the year 397 A.D., Now, he wasn't an old man when he died. In fact, he wasn't even 60 years old. He died at the age of 57, and he had no intention of becoming a bishop. And I think those are the guys that you want to be bishops, right? Who really, they're not looking for this. They're not trying to move up the ecclesiastical ladder, if you will. They are just trying to serve. And in fact, he didn't even want to be a priest. He was trained to be a lawyer by his parents. His family were Christian, but he had not actually come into the church yet. He was a catechumen. And after his father died, his mother took him to Rome and had got him educated for a civil career. And in the year 370, he was actually sent to govern the provinces, these two provinces called Emilia and Liguria, and his headquarters were to be in Milan. And at that time, even though Arianism, and yesterday, of course, was the feast of St. Nicholas, he was apparently an enemy of the arch-heretic Arius, who denied the Trinity, denied the divinity of Christ. Arianism had been stamped out at the Council of Nicaea. However, there were still, even though it was an official heresy, there were still a lot of people that believed in Arianism, and there was a huge conflict raging in those towns between Orthodox Catholics and Arians. And Ambrose tried to intervene, tried to sort of bring about peace between these two warring, you know, factions. And he did such a good job of that. Even though he was just a catechumen at the time, the people acclaimed him the Bishop of Milan. They said, you know, Ambrose for bishop, Ambrose for bishop. And they were, you know, those are the days when you're actually able to just acclaim somebody as a bishop. And that's exactly what happened. He got ordained and became the Bishop of Milan. Now, at that point, he was really well educated secular, in a secular sense in terms of his career. But he really did not know much about the scriptures, and he needed to catch up quickly. And that gives us a lot of hope, too. He was probably about 30 years old at this time, and so it's never too late. It's never too late to start reading the scriptures, taking them seriously, learning about them. That's one of the reasons why we do that so much on our sister program, The Faith Explained, which airs at 12:30 Central on Relevant Radio. Shameless advertisement there. But anyways, he just started diving into the scriptures, the works of Origen, an early church writer, and he began to really focus on this Lectio Divina method of reading scripture, you know, not just reading it for information's sake, but trying to pray through it as well. And we're going to talk to you about how he met St. Augustine, how he transformed his life after this really quick break on Relevant Radio. You're listening to The Cale Clark Show, 1-888-914-9149. See you in a moment.
Hi, this is Father Rocky with another Advent inspiration. I'm a very lucky guy, and I've received many wonderful Christmas gifts over the years, but the ones that brought me the most joy weren't the ones I got, but the ones I gave. I think you know what I mean. Think about it for a moment. Is there someone in your life, a relative, a parent, a brother, a sister, a child, a neighbor, a co-worker, a spouse who is missing you, who is lonely? Can you call them? Can you visit them? Can you send them a Christmas card? Can you forgive them? Can you overcome your fear, stop grinding the axe, and bury the hatchet? Just remember those golden words, for it is in giving that we receive. This Christmas, go ahead and splurge and give of your time, your heart, and your affection, just like Jesus did when he came to earth to save us from our sins and to save us from ourselves 2,000 years ago. And you will have a very Merry Christmas.
To hear this or any of Father's Advent inspirations, visit us on our mobile app or at relevantradio.com/advent.
The Relevant Radio studio line is sponsored by the Catholic Order of Foresters. Information about employment opportunities and their flexible premium life insurance plans is available at relevantradio.com/forester.
Explaining the faith so you can explain it to others. It's the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
You know who's really good at explaining the faith so they can explain it to others? St. Ambrose. It's his feast day today. And what a contrast, you know, between the kind of thing that was going on at the Hillsong Church in New York City with Carl Lentz, you know, this Protestant congregation, this megachurch. And Carl Lentz, this celebrity pastor who had a fall from grace, we talked about that before the break, was Justin Bieber's pastor, Kevin Durant, among other celebrities. The contrast between that kind of pastoral leadership, where there's kind of this caste system, and a pastor that truly wants to serve people, wow, St. Ambrose and what he did for his people, it was just on another level. And just while we're on the topic of Lentz, I don't want to, you know, throw him under the bus too much here, but Karen Moran texted me earlier during the show, and she made an interesting comment. It sounds a lot like Scientology, what they were doing at Hillsong, you know, trying to target the quote-unquote influencers. Now, I think there's probably two sides to that coin. They're probably trying, I mean, their motivation would have been good, I think, initially, that, you know, hey, if we target these influencers, they can in turn influence a lot of other people, hopefully, to become Christians. I think that was probably the original idea. Did it kind of go horribly awry? Perhaps. Christianity is not true because Kevin Durant believes it, okay, if he does believe it, you know, or Justin Bieber, right? It's true because of the facts. Because Jesus Christ actually lived, died, and was resurrected in human history. If he wasn't resurrected, the faith is simply not true, as St. Paul admits in his Corinthian correspondence. He says, we're all wasting our time here. We might as well just party, eat and drink, because tomorrow we die if there is no resurrection. But of course, Christ did rise from the dead. And so I think, I mean, there is, I understand that that methodology. You know, it's kind of like trying to get more bang for your buck. If you can influence the influencers, you know, they will in turn influence, you know, hundreds, maybe thousands of others. True. Every soul is valuable, though, for sure. And every soul has the same eternal weight and significance. And Ambrose knew that. Ambrose knew that. And one of the things that it's kind of interesting, because Ambrose, of course, was a huge influence on St. Augustine, who also became a father of the church and, you know, one of the most influential persons in the entire history of the church. And, of course, there was St. Monica, the mother of Augustine. They all became canonized saints, all three of them. And it was Monica who really prayed for Augustine to come back to the church. He'd kind of tuned her out, as a lot of kids do who have left the church, tune out their moms. And she went to Ambrose, who was her pastor, and said, "What do I do with this kid?" And he said very wisely, we've talked about this many times before, "Talk to God about Augustine about three times as much as you talk to Augustine about God. You know, pray for him." And one of the things that she undoubtedly prayed was that someone else would come into her son's life who he would listen to. And for Augustine, that was Ambrose. Augustine really admired Ambrose, and Ambrose really, he was acclaimed to be bishop. He was not looking for this at all, because this little kid in the crowd started this chant, you know, "Ambrose for bishop." And a little kid, the voice of a little kid, also really got Augustine focused back on Christ. Remember that in his Confessions, he talks about being in a garden, and he hears this child's voice. Now, whether there was a real kid or it was a voice from heaven, we don't know, but take up and read, take up and read. So he picks up the scriptures and starts reading, and that's where he starts to get connected. And then, of course, he meets Ambrose. And what really influenced Augustine, you know, wasn't Ambrose's intelligence, although clearly he was a very learned man, and he deeply appreciated the homilies that Ambrose would preach, but it was his life. And this is one of the things that Pope Benedict, you know, hammered home when he was talking about St. Ambrose and his general audience a few years ago. He said that, you know, what really got Augustine's attention was in 386, you know, remember, there's a conflict in the town with the Arians, and they actually wanted to take over one of the cathedrals that belonged to the church. And Ambrose, along with all of his people, barricaded themselves in the church. I mean, there were guards outside, there were police outside, and they were ready to die rather than hand over the church to this heretical group that was teaching, you know, just blasphemous things. And that really moved Augustine. Wow, that they were ready to die with this bishop. And so to be able to live out their faith, and by the way, that's incredible. And that, what a testimony for us today. Not just talking about, you know, how church buildings get desecrated and we need to protect them. But forget about that. What about heresy within the church that we allow into the church? And Ambrose would have none of that. He'd rather give his life than to have heresy preached from within a Catholic building, a Catholic church. And so Augustine, you know, learned so much from Ambrose. And a lot of what he learned, you know, some of this got into Vatican II. Vatican II quotes St. Augustine as saying that all clerics, particularly priests, and others who, as deacons or catechists, are engaged in ministry of the word, should immerse themselves in the scriptures by constant sacred reading and diligent study. For it must not happen that anyone becomes an empty preacher of the word of God to others, not being a hearer of the word in his own heart. In other words, we've got to live the message ourselves as well as be able to preach it well to other people. And that's really where, you know, people like Carl Lentz fall down. And, you know, obviously he's not in the true church anyways, but obviously he was not living up to his Christian ideals, to be sure. So anyways, Ambrose, Augustine, really, really beautiful stuff. And just one last thing that Pope Benedict wrote about Ambrose in his Introduction to Christianity, a book that he wrote many, many years before he became the Pope. He said that an educator in the faith cannot risk appearing like a sort of clown who recites a part by profession. In other words, it can't be just be a job or a role that you play. Rather, he must be like the beloved disciple who rested his head against his master's heart, and there he learned the way to think, to speak, and to act. So, you know, the image of the Apostle John picking up on the life of Christ, not just what he said, but the way he lived. And it was all coherent. It was all of a piece. And so the true disciple is the one whose proclamation of the gospel is the most credible and effective, most credible in his own life. That's what Pope Benedict had to say. So that's incredible stuff. Really, really good. And so we need to ask St. Ambrose to pray for us. Absolutely the case. So we got a lot to shout about. We got a lot to be excited about. And something else I'm excited about tonight is my Buffalo Bills are on Monday Night Football. And that makes me want to shout.
The Bills make me want to shout. Kick your heels up and shout. Throw your hands up and shout. Throw your head back and shout. Come on now. The Bills are making it happen now. Stand up now. Come on and shout.
Right, Monday Night Football. It's not too often the Bills are on Monday Night. Hey, they're on Monday Night Football this week. They're on Sunday Night Football next week against the Steelers. So good times, good times. Got a good team. They've got a shot this year. They've got a shot. And they're playing the 49ers tonight at home. Buffalo's one of the toughest places to play on the road. It's kind of sad that there are no fans there, of course. But they're unblemished at home this year. And guess what? No. They did lose to the Chiefs at home. I forgot. But I think they'll take care of the Niners tonight. No Jimmy G for the Niners. No Jimmy G. No problem for us. I think it should be good. But anyways, I'm looking forward to that tonight. And one cool story that came out of the NFL this weekend. A lot of the players are participating in this program called My Cleats, My Cause. And they're sort of painting their cleats sort of advertisements for these charities that they're trying to support. And I read about, this is a great story, Hayden Hurst, who's a tight end for the Atlanta Falcons, used to play for the Baltimore Ravens. He struggled with mental illness in his career. And he had this to say. This is a very powerful interview that he gave.
I can't really explain it. It's hard to unless you go through it. But depression, when you... You feel like nobody's there, despite my family being so close, and they're willing to do whatever. But when you're in that headspace and you're in that dark spot, you feel alone. You feel like nobody's there, nobody cares. So I guess for me in those years, that's why I turned to drinking and pills and cocaine, like anything that I could get my hands on to numb that feeling of embarrassment where I wouldn't have to explain myself to my family as to why my life was like unraveling. And one night it just caught up to me.
I got a lot of respect for what you appreciate did, came you. Out and talked about. Me and my mom have a foundation about suicide prevention.
Yeah.
Respect the hell out of you
appreciate
for talking about
we'll
it, man.
Collab one day.
Absolutely.
When you are the quarterback for the Dallas Cowboys and you're scrutinized so much already, and you come out and you talk about, hey, I was feeling this way with depression, you know, I suffered loss in my family with suicide. What a brave thing to come out and talk about.
You're listening to the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. 1-888-914-9149 is a toll-free studio line to call. That was audio from Hayden Hurst, and what you just heard was mixed in with this interview. You heard him talking to another player, and that was what Hayden Hurst's mother, Kathy, said was really a divine intervention that saved a lot of people's lives who heard that. And that was the moment when her son, Hayden Hurst, who was playing for the Falcons when they're in their game against the Cowboys earlier this year on September the 20th, it was a great game, heartbreaking loss for the Falcons. It's Cowboys kicker. Greg Zuerlein, who's a practicing Catholic, nailed a field goal at the end of the game to win it for the Cowboys. Well, very common for players to catch up with each other and shake hands from opposing teams after the game on the field. And Hayden Hurst happened to be mic'd up for that game for television. So the audio was able to be picked up. His conversation with Dak Prescott, the QB for the Cowboys, who's now out for the year with a horrific leg injury, but Dak Prescott, he just wanted to thank him for what he had done for people struggling with mental illness. Earlier that September, just a couple months ago, Dak Prescott had given an interview at the start of the season. He talked about he had struggled with mental illness. And Prescott from the Cowboys had done an interview with Graham Bensinger, and it was on YouTube. Prescott talked about the day that he woke up and he found out that his older brother, Jace, had taken his own life back in April. And he himself, Dak Prescott himself, had struggled with anxiety, depression, sleeplessness after this had happened, and also during the early days of the COVID-19 pandemic. And Prescott had met with the media after this. He talked about, you know, why he, you know, disclosed his mental health struggles. And he said, listen, it's important to be vulnerable, to be genuine, to be transparent. When you're a leader and your voice is being heard by so many, you can inspire a lot of people. And most people praised Dak Prescott for what he said. You know, a lot of people don't think that successful people can struggle with things like this. People, you know, in general tend to look at pro athletes, you know, people who have means, and they say, these guys don't have a care in the world. Well, a lot of them are struggling with things that nobody knows underneath the surface. And Dak Prescott disclosed this, and some people didn't like that. Skip Bayless, who is a really well-known television columnist and sports commentator, said on the Fox sports show Undisputed that he had no sympathy for Prescott going public with his mental illness, saying, quote, he's the quarterback of America's team. If you reveal any little weakness, it can affect your team's ability to believe in you in the toughest spot, end of quote. Well, Skip Bayless was roundly condemned for those very insensitive comments on social media by fans, writers, even his own employer, Fox Sports, was unhappy with him. Kevin Love, who's an NBA player, who has also been outspoken about his own struggles with mental illness, he tweeted out that, hey, Dak Prescott saved people's lives probably by what he said, just giving people the courage to want to come forward themselves. And it just so happened that Skip Bayless's put down of Prescott came on World Suicide Prevention Day of all days. Anyways, this is really what inspired Hayden Hurst, who obviously had his own struggles, to come forward. And that's why he went up to Dak Prescott after the game and said, man, I really appreciate you talking about what you've been through. And Hayden Hurst has now started the Hayden Hurst Family Foundation to try to raise awareness for people struggling with mental illness. And so good for you. That's a really good job by Hayden Hurst. And it's something that a lot of people struggle with. And it's not talked about too much. And this is something more that when people are struggling with mental illness, it's more than just, you know, they're not praying enough. You know, it's not always a spiritual issue. Very often there are other things going on. Sometimes there can be chemical imbalances and a lot of other things that need to be addressed properly through professionals, through mental health professionals. And so that's something that the church really needs to get better at in terms of partnering with professionals in those areas. You know, priests need to know, you know, when they're counseling people, like when to hand it off to somebody who can deal with these things that maybe they're not trained for. And so maybe that's something that you've struggled with yourself. I don't know if that story spoke to you. If you've heard about that, you can call 1-888-914-9149 on the Cale Clark Show if you want to get through and chat about that. So today, by the way, is December the 7th, and it is, of course, Pearl Harbor Remembrance Day. We're going to talk about that, and there's going to be something else that we commemorated yesterday that's associated with World War I that you probably never heard of, but it is also an inspiring story of heroism and courage, and I'm going to share that with you after this quick break.
This is the Cale Clark Show, giving you the confidence you need to bring the faith into everyday life.
Hey, welcome back to the show. Oddly enough, we were just having a discussion, very off topic, during the break about the fact that I just recently found out that pineapple pizza was invented by, or sorry, Hawaiian pizza. That's the actual name, but pineapple pizza. What am I talking about? Hawaiian pizza, maybe some people call it pineapple pizza, was invented by a Canadian. So you can blame Canada for this, you know, if you are not a fan. This is a very polarizing topic. I understand that. Patrick Alog, our call screener, is a huge pineapple pizza fan. So you can call him if you disagree with him. You may not want to get on the air and have a question for me. You can call him and talk to him about pineapple pizza. 1-888-914-9149. Yeah, it was invented by a pizzeria in Ontario, the province in which I live. And Yeah, there's some people who dispute that. They say, no, we created it. Some Australians are saying that they created it first. But anyways, I'm going to go with the Canadian angle because I'm Canadian. So there's no way to prove it. So some people don't think pineapple belongs on a pizza, but others, even professional chefs, I saw this chef talking about on TV once, and he was like, no, this is actually great from a flavor perspective, especially if you use bacon. Maybe you can use Canadian bacon. You know, Karen Moran reminded me, you could really use Canadian bacon on this. Yeah, that's a great idea. Pea meal bacon. Bacon, the sort of savoriness of the bacon and the sweetness of the pineapple, that's a great flavor combination. You know, I think it's a good idea. Anyways. Call me if you disagree. 1-888-914-9149. But you probably have more weighty things to talk about, hopefully. And we just did a piece before the break on Hayden Hurst from the Atlanta Falcons and how he and Dak Prescott, QB of the Cowboys, are trying to raise awareness about mental illness, something that a lot of people are struggling with, and it can't be seen with human eyes very often. It's under the surface. And people that, you know, they look like they've got it all together sometimes are really hiding some big, big hurts. We're going to go to the phones right now. Christy is calling from Glendale, California. Christy, welcome to the show. How are you?
I am well. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome.
It's good to be on the show because I love your show.
Well, thank you. You're very kind. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Christy. I appreciate that.
Yeah. So, I was glad to hear you talk about mental illness. Mm-hmm. Because a lot of times it's just it's tabooed. And even though there's still a lot of stuff going on today that brings a kind of like in your face awareness about mental illness, like what happened to like Anthony Bourdain and you remember Kate Spade?
Right. Yes.
But still people are like, oh, they just can snap out of it. And, you know, they just could snap out of it. And like, I hear people say that and it really brings me to tears. And I was saying, you know, you can't just snap out of it. I struggle with mental illness and I'm very open about it. I remember one time, I was coming to pick up my daughter from school and then they looked at me and she goes, oh, you lost a lot of weight. And she goes, what have you been doing? I go, oh, it's called depression. And then she looked at me and when I'm in my depression, I don't eat, you know, I know it's different from a lot of people, but with me, I don't have an appetite. So she looked at me strange, like I was kidding. And I go, no, I'm not, you know, depression did it. So I want to start something at my parish to help people with mental illness.
Yeah.
Because it's so important. It's so important to me.
I think that's great. And I commend you for that because, as you said, you know, there's a stigma around it. People used to see it as a sign of weakness. Why can't you just snap out of it? People for that. And I have a close friend who's really he's a great Catholic guy, and he's really struggled with depression, and for him, a lot of it too is seasonal affective disorder. Like when it's cold, you know, the cold weather, the short days, lack of sunlight, you know, that just kind of adds to his mental outlook. And things can get pretty dark for him during the winter, especially. And he's been pretty open about it. I think he's helped a lot of people. And just even talking about that, like just getting it out in the open, I think is the first step for sure. To just get rid of that stigma that, you know, mental health is just as important as bodily health and spiritual health as well. We're holistic creatures. You know, we're body, soul, unity. We're not robots. And it's important to recognize that. So I thank you very much for calling in, Christy, and I hope that's encouraging for a lot of people hearing your story, too.
I hope so, too. And you know what? My husband likes you a lot. He's a Canadian. And
must
and
be
I
a good guy
against you that you like the Buffalo Bills because I'm a diehard fan of the 49ers.
Hey, well, listen, I'm sure you'll be watching, cheering against the Bills tonight in great franchise, the Niners. Fantastic. And I was always a big Joe Montana fan growing up. I love Joe Cool.
Oh,
so
I was supposed to marry him.
Sure. A lot of girls said that.
But I end up marrying a Canadian, so.
well, you've been blessed beyond compare. Well, thank you very much for calling in, Christy. I really appreciate you. That was Christy calling from Glendale, California. A great call. And so, yeah, it's important to raise awareness about mental health as well as spiritual health and physical health, of course. It goes without saying. So great call from Christy listening in. Glendale, California. And something else a lot of people aren't aware of, and of course, as we touched on before the break, today is, of course, Pearl Harbor Remembrance Day, and we remember all those who lost their lives during that very, very dark day on December the 7th, 1941. It's been 79 years since the tragic events of that day. And yesterday, December the 6th, was also a day of commemoration of something that a lot of people have not heard of, but there was a great Twitter thread, and I think we'll link to this on the show account, that was put forth by the Canadian forces operating in the United States. Of course, there's a great partnership between our two countries, and a lot of Canadian forces personnel are serving in the USA, as we're, of course, allies, and we cooperate together on so many things. And it starts off by talking about a tree, and every year there's a tree from Nova Scotia, which is the province where I'm from. I'm from the Halifax area, Nova Scotia. Every year, there's a tree from Nova Scotia that goes to the Boston Common, and the Nova Scotians send one every single year. And it has to do with the tragic events that happened on December the 6th, 1917. And this was the Halifax explosion. And if you don't know about this, this was the largest man-made explosion that ever took place in the entire world prior to the dropping of the atomic bombs in World War II. And it all started out on December the 6th, 1917, Canada, along with many other nations, has been involved in World War I for more than 3 years. But children in Halifax are excited because it's almost Christmas. And I'm just going to read this Twitter thread to you from the Canadian forces based in the U.S. They did a really good job narrating this. On December the 6th, two ships collided in Halifax Harbor. Sparks, fire, black smoke, people watching from their windows. Children walking to school run to the shoreline to see what's happening. One ship is carrying relief supplies destined for war-torn Belgium. The other ship is laden with 2.9 kilotons of explosives. And Vince Coleman, he could have run. He could have saved himself. He knew what was going to happen, but he stayed to warn two incoming trains about what was going to happen. They survived, but he did not. Listen to this clip.
Look at that.
She's a half a mile away. Huh?
She's loaded, boys. You gotta get out of here. Full of explosives.
Children,
come on. Oh, no. No, get out of here.
Vince.
I'm back in the school.
Please, get these children out of here. That ship is gonna blow. No.
Mr. Coleman.
Hurry. Hurry. You gotta get these people out of here. That ship is gonna blow. The train.
What?
People, get out of here. It's gonna blow up.
Mission ship on fire. Stop train. Please, God, answer.
Coleman, there's no time.
The train's coming in towards Pier 6. I've got to warn
you. Come on, Vince, come on. There are 700 people aboard it. I've got to stop it. Come on, come on. Acknowledge.
Halifax was devastated. 9,000 wounded, 2,000 dead, including Vince Coleman, dispatcher.
Vince Coleman saved a lot of lives that day. The explosion and the subsequent tsunami that occurred afterwards leveled everything within 1.5 square miles. The blast shattered windows as far as 60 miles away. Fishermen off the coast of Massachusetts said they heard the boom. The ship's anchor landed 2.3 miles away. 1,600 people died instantly. Another 400 died within days. Children never made it to school. They never returned home. Shrapnel wounded thousands, blinding those who had stood in windows watching the blaze. When a blizzard hit the next day, 25,000 people were without shelter. Canadian military rushed to the scene, and British sailors were sent as rescue teams. The USS Tacoma was 52 miles away at the time when the crew felt the blast. And its captain, Captain Powers, Symington, altered course to head towards the explosion. They went towards the explosion. Doctors and nurses poured in from all over the place. Doctors and nurses rushing toward danger. Familiar then, familiar now. But Halifax needed more help. When word reached Boston, details were very, very scant, and Governor Samuel McCall offered assistance immediately by telegraph. And he said, I'm going to offer you surgeons. I'm going to offer you nurses. I'm going to offer you supplies. I'm going to offer you medical help. And because I'm not going to wait for you to say yes to this, I'm just going to send this. And so unbelievable. The people of Massachusetts sent $15 million, the equivalent of $15 million, to support the relief efforts. So many people helped us, and that's why we send a tree to Boston every year. That's in Boston Common. It's a beautiful story. Thanks for listening to the Cale Clark Show. We'll be back tomorrow. God bless you.
Thank you for listening to my daddy.